Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Hi, I'm Jen White, and this is The Morning Shift. Tired of wall-to-wall Mueller mania? Want to get caught up on important news stories in and around Chicago? Well, you've come to the right place, our Friday News Roundup.
Cook County alone lost 24,000 residents within the last year or so, more than any other county in the U.S.
Newly released text messages from Chicago prosecutor Kim Fox have some questioning her impartiality in the recent Jussie Smollett case.
So being a Democratic Socialist to me means that the people who work every day and create the wealth should have access to resources. That's not the case.
Joining us this week to talk population loss, Kim Fox, Ed Burke, and more, our WBEZ political reporter Dan Mihalopoulos and Daily Line political reporter A.D. Quigg, who's shocked at how the final votes have gone down in many of those too close to call ward races.
This was just incredible to watch unfold over the past few weeks. It was like every day someone's up by 15. Oh no, now it's 13. Right. Oh, now it's 17. So with the addition of Rosana Rodriguez-Sanchez, that means the number of aldermen associated with the Democratic Socialists of America increases to 6, which is more than 10% of city council, which, you know, a lot of veterans would say that doesn't get you to 26, but it does, I think, force the council a little bit further to the left. It introduces a whole new set of ideas and kind of shifts the Overton window, which is a phrase we're hearing a lot these days about what Chicago City Council can accomplish, as opposed to just taking care of ward services, doing some kind of big citywide policy.
Well, Alderman Deb Mell said she would ask for a discovery recount. What does that process look like?
That's just looking at a small sliver of votes to see if there's enough irregularities to do a larger recount.
So, Dan, we just heard from AD that there's this possibility that these new incoming aldermen could at least create some sort of shift in city council. What's your read?
My read is, you know, when we talk about 6 of them, again, it is far short of a majority. But on some issues, maybe you combine them with the roughly 8 or 10 progressives that are still there. And we can talk about the difference between Democratic Socialists and progressives. There's a lot of similarities there, but some differences, I think. The significance is, though, you go from 1 Democratic Socialist to 6 now. And that is going to make a difference in the tenor of the debate, not only on issues that go across the city, but even on some local issues. You know, this morning we had a report here from Linda Lutton about how Byron Sixo Lopez, one of the 6, is trying to affect the 78, which is an issue in the 25th Ward, one of these mega projects heavily subsidized by the city's taxpayers. And it's been approved, but how might he tried to force them to provide more affordable housing, because that's one of the big issues for the socialists.
Yeah, how would you describe the difference between these incoming Democratic Socialists and progressive Democrats in city council, AD?
Part of it is about the basis on which they make decisions. It's a democratic process. I think you'll see all of them kind of starting their own ward organizations where they gather everyone together and say, okay, how should I vote on this? Another is a big emphasis on coalition building, working together and figuring out what they can do to pass more citywide policy. I think a lot of progressive aldermen, and they all kind of got together last Friday for a boot camp, and they said, we kind of also kind of got back to reality where we realized that a lot of what the people in our wards care about is just ward services. So what they're going to have to do is handle what's going on in their wards, fill those potholes, get those garbage cart requests out, but also work on things like the Obama CBA, work on things like rent control, work on things like police reform. It'll be an interesting fight.
Do you think with this new city council, we could see more conversations, including the idea of equity and which areas of the city get investment, Dan?
Yeah, I think it's already been an issue, the two Chicagos, for a very long time. I think it's more nuanced than that, but I think that will be really at the forefront now. I think you'll have, you know, I've gone from when I first started covering city council in 2004, barely able to find anyone who will say anything about the mayor at the time, who was Rich Daley, to a pretty large and robust block of aldermen that are pushing, I think, the city more to the left. Part of a national trend that we see with Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Congress. I like to say that all the Democrats now say that they're progressive. Even Rahm Emanuel would say that he's progressive. I think there are few on the left wing of the party that would truly see it that way. But the people who are identifying themselves as socialists, this is the largest group in a century. And so now you're starting to see at the level of, Fox News or the presidency, people saying things that kind of sound like Red Scare sort of tactics or red baiting.
Yeah, there's a couple older city council folks who are like, are they one of the new commies?
Really?
Oh, well, like half joking. But yeah, people are stunned by the new numbers.
So I'm curious what this means for the establishment. City council members, people who have held onto their seats, have been there for a long time. You know, what is this shift in the way they're thinking about running the city?
Well, they're thinking to themselves, they're looking at these five new Democratic Socialist aldermen, and two of them are replacing aldermen that are enmeshed in corruption scandals. That's Jeanette Taylor in the 20th and Sigcho Lopez in the 25th, where Danny Solis has become a figure in the Ed Burke corruption scandal. But three of them are replacing aldermen that were there either for a long time or that were part of a family dynasty. You have Andre Vasquez replacing Pat O'Connor, who was Emmanuel's floor leader. Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez is representing Deb Mell, who was basically the nepotism choice to replace her father after nearly 40 years that he was in the city council. And also Maria Hedden is replacing someone in Joe Moore in the 49th Ward up in Rogers Park, who was a very big ally of Emmanuel, if not daily, before him.
Well, Toni Preckwinkle sat down with ABC7 this week and said her loss was a case of the electorate opposing the status quo. Let's take a listen.
You know, I think that this was a tough campaign for people who were incumbents. This was a tough time in our political cycle for people who are incumbents. I'm very proud of my public career, but in this environment, you know, having a 2.5-decade career of public service cuts both ways.
AD reactions?
I was not surprised to hear that she wasn't a little bit more introspective about what led to the loss. Craig Wall, who did that interview, kind of tried to press her on, do you think it was about maybe not showing your human side enough? Do you think it was about the number of negative ads that came out immediately after this runoff? And she was like, well, it was a change election. And I was surprised to say that she didn't place more blame on the impact of Alderman Ed Burke. She did say, I received more scrutiny than him. But I don't know. It's early still. I would love to talk to her in 3 or 4 months as she's kind of settling back in as the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party and seeing what she wants to do with the party and settling back in as president of the Cook County Board and seeing what she wants to push there.
Well, we'll be talking with Toni Preckwinkle here in studio next Wednesday. Dan?
I don't have as much sympathy, although I do agree with her that there was a throw-the-bombs-out ambiance and a mood among the electorate that did not favor her, that certainly favored Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot in the end. But I think that Toni Preckwinkle has to be honest with herself and look at what did she do over the last few years to bring herself closer and more part of the establishment. It's not just a matter of being there a long time, like she said. She made some conscious decisions. She decided to be the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party. She decided herself over a period of years to continue to support her predecessor as the chairman, Joe Berrios, despite his nepotism and things that she didn't agree with, but she tolerated those things. And she's the one that allowed Ed Burke to cozy up next to her. Of course, she's colossally unfortunate that for her, the scandal struck with Ed Burke being charged a couple months before the election and having fundraised for her to the tune of a six-figure amount. But she took that money and she knew who Ed Burke was.
Two other stories we're watching. Illinois Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who sits on the House Intelligence Committee, says at this point he does not support an effort to impeach President Trump, but he does want more information from Robert Mueller on whether Trump obstructed justice. And doctors are warning Governor J.B. Pritzker about a potential measles outbreak. That's because back in 2016, then-Governor Bruce Rauner stopped providing free measles vaccines for kids in CHIP, the state children's health insurance program. You can find more info about those stories at WBEZ.org. Well, turning to Alderman Ed Burke, yesterday the developer accused of seeking favors from him pleaded not guilty in federal court. Dan, tell us about this case.
It's a pretty simple bribery accusation, which the developer, Charles Tsui, is saying that he's not guilty. At least that was the plea that he entered. But he had some property in Portage Park. He's from the North Shore, from Lake Forest, but he had some property in Portage Park. He needed help from the city. He wanted $2 million in tax increment financing subsidies. He wanted a sign permit, essentially. He ran into some trouble with City Hall and said, look, I need to have Ed Burke on my side. Never mind that Portage Park is nowhere near Ed Burke's ward. Charles Tsui told the guy that he had as his property tax lawyer, a guy named George Reveliotis. He sent him an email and he said, look, I need to go and switch this business. I need to basically fire you, at least temporarily, and hire Ed Burke because I really need Ed Burke's help with this. And so hiring Ed Burke's private property tax appeal firm was the way that Charles Tsui allegedly bribed Burke and got him to help him with his problems at City Hall.
Well, Alderman Burke was not charged in connection with this case. He's accused of shaking down a restaurant owner for legal work in his 14th ward. AD, what's the latest on that case?
We're kind of waiting for a series of shoes to drop. There were no additional charges against Burke included in this Portage Park case, but prosecutors have until May 3rd to kind of get everything out there. So May 3rd is the date that we're looking at.
Well, this week we saw a dump of email and text messages from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office related to the Jussie Smollett case. Dan, what, if anything, did we learn from these emails and text messages?
I think the fundamental thing that we learned is that Kim Fox, although she told the public, perhaps not formally, but told the public that she was recusing herself, that she wouldn't be part of this case because she had discussed it with a relative of Smollett. She was, in fact, part of the case. She was telling her first assistant and other people in her office that she felt that it was overcharged. And eventually they did drop those charges. And I think she was clearly involved. Now, she would say that even before the release of these text messages, she had said that she had only recused herself in the colloquial sense.
Well, there's an interesting message you're referring to where Kim Fox says, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, I recuse myself, but I just want to point out that if people are criticizing our office for overcharging people, they can easily point to the Smollett case. AD, what did you make of that?
I went through and read a lot of these text messages, and I was surprised that she would say anything. But they said, you know, this wasn't about her trying to influence the case. This is about her talking about setting future policy, and she was comparing it to the charges brought in the R. Kelly case. It's very interesting to get an inside look at what these conversations were like. The Tribune has published all the text messages, and you can kind of scroll through them and see. It's them basically not understanding how big of a deal this would be. And I remember I was on the show a few weeks ago saying, I can't believe how leggy this thing has become and how long it's lasted. And you can see them sharing links to news stories and kind of reacting in real time. And their group chat is called The Foxhole. So for Kim Fox, someone who is so savvy, who ran such a tight campaign, who really read the moment of progressive prosecutors and how successful they could be, it's surprising to me that they did not expect how big the media circus would be around this case.
Dan, why do you think they were blindsided?
I don't think they should have been blindsided, because I actually disagree with AD, and I don't think that she ran such a great campaign when she was elected. I think she was on the way to losing until the Laquan McDonald situation blew up. And so having benefited from a situation that did blow up and become a national story, this is not her first dance here. And I think it is stunning to me, as AD said, that they would be in a way blindsided by the significance of the case. Okay, nobody died. Nobody committed a violent crime. And she's right, Kim Fox, about that, that, you know, you're trying to charge people based on how much of a threat the person presents to the public. And I don't think Smollett presents a threat to the public. But, you know, being honest with authorities, whether we're looking at the Mueller investigation or anything where law enforcement is involved, is something that law enforcement usually is pretty strict about. And she seems pretty blasé about the fact that Jussie Smollett wasted the time of the Chicago police and prosecutors here.
Well, Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot said she wouldn't comment on pending legislation referring to the city's move to sue Jussie Smollett for about $130,000.
That's right.
For the overtime it took to investigate this case. But she also said, and I'll quote her here, "We've got a lot of things on our plate, a lot of pressing issues that are truly affecting people's lives. This doesn't rank as a matter of any importance to me." AD, how much does her position on this matter, especially since she's taking office in just a little over a month?
I'm not sure, but I think her point is well taken. And this is something that Kim Fox's folks brought up in those text messages. We have hundreds of unsolved murders in the city. And that is something that I know Kim Fox's folks and something that we spoke about weeks ago mm-hmm. should be a focus of all this flurry of media attention, perhaps.
Dan, your thoughts?
You know, my thoughts are that, Lori Lightfoot is trying to stay out of something as best as she can, something that there's no plus side for her to get involved one way or another. I think we have to look at the big picture still. You know, as AD pointed out, Kim Fox is one of the prosecutors across the country who has been elected, I think, with a pretty strong mandate to bring criminal justice reform. And that means, you know, not overcharge people. That's a very true point that Kim Fox brought up. At the same time, she's getting blowback from people like the Fraternal Order of Police, who already were critical of her because they want prosecutors who are tougher on crime, who are more of your traditional prosecutors that will charge things to the ultimate extent that they can, as if it will necessarily prevent people from committing crime. And so I think she could benefit, actually, from some of the people that are coming forward and criticizing her here because, I don't think the Fraternal Order of Police really represents much of the populace of the city of Chicago.
Before we wrap up, new census data reported this week shows that from 2017 to 2018, Cook County lost population for the fourth year in a row, just over 24,000 people. It also shows population growth in the five collar counties is slowing, and there was a drop in that same 2017 to 2018 period of time. AD, what does that tell you about what's happening in Illinois right now?
This is a story of Black population loss more than any other race in Chicago, and this is something that's been going on since roughly 2000. And there's no one cause. I mean, I've talked to demographers about this. I talked to a lot of political candidates about this. And what a lot will point to is disinvestment, the closure of schools, the closure of mental health clinics, not seeing private investment in the neighborhoods, which is something that came up over and over again in the campaign. And it's something that's difficult to address if there's no one cause. And this is something Lori Lightfoot said. We need to show reinvestment in these communities to show people that Chicago is open to everyone, but it's going to be a tough thing to tackle.
Well, Dan, with new administrations at both the state and city level, how urgent of an issue should this be for them? Like we just said, there are a lot of things the state is dealing with right now, a lot of things Chicago is dealing with right now. With a complex issue like population, you know, how should they approach this?
Yeah, there are things that can be done, I think, to really counter this, but it's very complicated, like you said, because there are a variety of factors. There are some things that are beyond the control of Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot or the new governor of Illinois. One of the factors that's also playing in here, you know, immigration had been offsetting some of the losses to the Sun Belt states that are occurring not just in Chicago, but in other parts of the Rust Belt, parts of the Northeast as well, and the upper Midwest. So I think when you have policies in Washington that are discouraging immigration, not only undocumented immigration, but really discouraging even legal immigration, people who are educated, people who are uneducated, who are laborers that are not coming to Chicago in the numbers that they were coming here before, that's a big impact on the overall numbers here, too, which nothing you could do about it locally.
AD, really quickly, you get the last word here.
We've seen Latino population slow, white population continue to grow, and Asian population growing faster than all others, which is just interesting and something I'm going to be watching for a long time and to see what Lori Lightfoot does specifically to speak to Black Chicago.
The Daily Line's A.D. Quigg and WBEZ's Dan Mihalopoulos on this week's Friday News Roundup. Thanks for listening, and watch out for a Sunday show. It'll drop into your feed while you're sleeping Saturday night. You'll have it in plenty of time to fire it up Sunday morning along with your coffee and eggs or whatever you enjoy for a weekend breakfast. Until then, have a great weekend. I'm Jen White, and this is The Morning Shift from WBEZ Chicago. Thank you.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.